This is Steve Smith at WCG Patient Radio. WCG is a company focused on the ethical, safe, and efficient conduct of clinical trials. We are speaking today with Dr. Jonca Camille Bull, MD, about the recent news of health disparities in low-income minority communities where COVID-19 has hit especially hard, and how COVID-19 clinical trials relate to this. Dr. Bull is a regulatory affairs expert with broad therapeutic experience. She helps guide strategic development and implementation of clinical trials protocols and has over two decades in policy development and advocacy, advancing strategies for clinically meaningful inclusion in clinical trials. She has been a vice president of regulatory consulting with the PPD Global Product Development Group and therapeutic director for ophthalmology. She is a subject matter expert in advancing clinical trials diversity and bioethical considerations in clinical trials for patient centricity and the patient voice. Prior to joining PPD, she was an assistant commissioner at the FDA with a focus on diverse populations and clinical trials, a vice president for U.S. North American regulatory policy for Novartis Pharmaceuticals, and a director of clinical regulatory policy for Genentech. Dr. Bull held various senior leadership roles in the FDA across a range of disease areas and programs in pre- and post-marketing drug regulation. And for 12 years, from 1982 to 1994, she cared for patients in a multi-specialty medical surgical practice in the Washington, D.C. metro area. She has an undergraduate degree from Princeton University, a medical degree from Duke University, and did residencies in general medicine and ophthalmology at George Washington University Hospital in Washington, D.C., where she served as an assistant clinical professor. Hello, Dr. Bull.
Hello, Steve.
Many people have seen the news telling us that COVID-19 is hitting low-income African Americans and other minorities in low-income neighborhoods especially hard, to the extent it is clearly a public health crisis on top of the public health crisis of the pandemic itself. Many experts speaking about this point, about this fact, point to the prevalence of underlying health conditions in high prevalence in those communities. Clinical trials are underway to try to develop a vaccine and antibody tests and to learn more about the nature of the coronavirus. Community advocates wonder if the problems African Americans from such communities are facing are taken into consideration in this research, and the same goes for other people of color and sometimes new minorities in the country. Others say that the health disparities, the underlying conditions that are prevalent in these communities, should be addressed, but they don't know why COVID trials themselves are relevant. Why does it matter to diversify clinical trials?
Well, thank you, Steve, for a very helpful framing of the issues that we face here. Now, your question, why does it matter to diversify clinical trials? Our overarching goal is that clinical research in therapeutics will result in data for safety and efficacy, and that translated into what clinicians will use, what healthcare providers will use to guide prescribing decisions for their patients. So you want to ensure that the data that is generated, the data generated being the clinical trials that were designed and executed in evaluation of a therapeutic, sufficiently represents that intended population that will be using the drug. Now, when we talk about intended population, you really have to look carefully at who has the disease. So if we're looking at disease states such as hypertension or chronic obstructive pulmonary disease or asthma, it's fundamental to good trial planning that attention is given to the population and how do you find the appropriate patients to participate in a trial. So upfront planning is absolutely critical to achieving a clinical trial that addresses diverse populations. It's not just a nice to do, it's really a necessary to do because for two factors. One, is that from the standpoint of equipoise, you don't want one group necessarily representing all patients. You want to have an equitable distribution of the risk that participation in a clinical trial entails, such that that is representative. Secondly, you need to know if a drug is going to have a different effect in different populations. And different populations can be characterized by relevant underlying comorbidities, and that those are taken into account because that's going to reflect the real-world population that will use a drug. And comorbidities, as public health data tells us, can have disparities. And let's actually have a working definition of disparities, being that there is a disproportionate impact in certain demographic subgroups. That if you look at, for example, asthma, and asthma, particularly pediatric asthma, having a disparate impact in minority children, in African-American children, and Latino children, more specifically in Puerto Rican children. And then you have to unwrap, why do you have these disparities? And there are, and I think what connects to our crisis with COVID-19 is that it has literally been sort of like that thread that unravels, that the existing conditions of lack of access to care, living in conditions that don't provide a healthy environment, access to healthy food, living in close quarters, all of these things, I think, have informed our crisis with COVID-19, but they also provide an underpinning to the ideology that many of us consider foundational to why we have disparities in our public health setting that preceded the COVID-19 crisis. So it basically has been an uncovering and a confounding of what we knew was an already existing problem. So I think basically we should not be surprised that we're seeing these same disparities basically magnified because you've got a contagious disease that for people living in close quarters, not in the healthiest of circumstances, individuals who are not able to take the steps such as to shelter in place, to not go to work, many of these individuals work in low-wage jobs. These are the folks that are going in to work in the grocery stores, that are doing these deliveries. And so it's, I think we have to have a reality check on the broader societal context and the broader socioeconomic context as to what is foundational to why these disparities are basically magnified in the COVID-19 setting.
Yes, the mayor of Chicago quoted in the BBC article that I first saw about this, and then that story spread across the media as well in the Washington Post and many news outlets on television. She spoke about these health disparities in the communities and things you mentioned just now, like even lack of good nutrition, which is so important to having a good immune system, and all the diseases that are prevalent. She also talked about walkable streets where it's not even safe for a lot of people mm-hmm. to go out and try to walk to where there's food, or walk and stand at a bus stop that they'd need to take to a doctor. And then hospitals are often not in their communities. So a lot of people wonder, well, then if it's so complex, is this really a population that we should also be trying to get a clinical trial done with and include them in a trial when we're trying to hurry up and get a vaccine developed? So could you talk a little bit more about why inclusion is actually going to help us get overall better health?
Well, I think we have to acknowledge the fact that the coronavirus does not discriminate. We're dealing with a highly contagious disease, and so including these populations in trials is absolutely essential, because these are the same folks that are going to need to know that the vaccine works in these populations, that if you've got background comorbidities, if you're living in an area where the air quality is poor, if you are, for example, on certain medications that may entail some interaction or interference with the effect of the vaccine, all of these things have to be taken into account because we live in community, and it would not be a realistic approach to, you know, just to not take into account the fact that there's a lot of interaction and potential for furthering the spread of disease. We're seeing it concentrated in certain communities, but this can have an exponential effect in terms of extending beyond that community. We really can't wall the air off, and certain aspects of human-to-human contact are still going to take place. And so we really have to look at clinical trials in a holistic way because we really want to optimize the effectiveness of the vaccines in a way that we are also optimizing protecting all of our communities because we really live in community with each other.
So this is really the real world living conditions. These are those
exactly.
conditions that the virus takes advantage of, and the purpose of the clinical research includes trying to figure out what the virus is really doing and how we can really stop it. So it sounds like we absolutely must be including such background or underlying conditions and communities.
Exactly. And I think it's important also to note that this is not, addressing disparities is not a new issue from the standpoint of policies impacting clinical trials. Going back to the earliest days of issues around inclusion of women in clinical trials in the early 1990s and the women's health movement and broadening inclusion criteria to include women also brought into play attention to inclusion of minority groups in trials. So there's a long arc of history in terms of policy development, getting policies implemented and really getting strategies embedded in the clinical trial enterprise has been slower to adopt. And, you know, there are some that, you know, make the case that because there is a need for efficiencies in getting products developed, that including demographic subgroups, including more minority populations, would slow down development. The reality is well known that oftentimes these communities may not have access to research sites, but we also have opportunities because many of our major academic centers are located in urban areas. So leveraging building trust at a basic day-to-day level and raising the profile of clinical trials and the value of participation. It's notable that there has been research done in the past that looked at the willingness of minority populations to participate in trials. And the findings have been, one, that minority populations are as willing and maybe even slightly more willing out of altruism to participate in trials. The other aspect to note is that in the context of trials and opportunities to advance minority participation, oftentimes they're not made aware of trials, whether this is due to implicit bias on the part of researchers, that the challenges of minority populations oftentimes not being in jobs that allow time off from work to participate in a trial, not having sick leave, and looking at participation in a trial as additional burden. I think we have to be more solution oriented in that regard. And by solution
so you're saying
oriented,
that you're speaking about something, a lot of people will quickly dismiss the idea of inclusion by saying that African Americans are not willing to participate in trials they don't want to. And then you just said, well, the research shows they're actually quite willing. Mm-hmm. So I think you're suggesting that it has more to do with the communication and inviting them in. Is that what you're saying?
That's exactly right. Because oftentimes, and there was actually a large study done by NIH a few years back that did an analysis of clinical trials and inclusion. And their finding was that the fundamental reason that there weren't more minorities in clinical trials is that they weren't asked to participate. So there are certainly movements led by NIH, led by advocacy groups, led by disease advocacy groups, to raise the profile, raise the awareness of the need to have more minorities in trials, but also to highlight the value and the importance of clinical trials. I'll share with you a personal anecdote. I spoke at a meeting a couple of years ago of African-American health professionals. And in the Q&A, I had a doctor ask me, say, you know, Junk, what I need to know is that these drugs have been studied in patients like the ones I take care of. So here was a healthcare provider who was strongly advocating, and there were many heads nodding in the room, of the need to have minorities, have patients representative of their clinical population in trials. I think sometimes there is also on the part of the healthcare provider community some hesitation to refer patients. I think we all, across all groups, have some reluctance to take on risk. Human beings, on average, tend to be a bit risk averse, not something that is relegated to one group or another. And can have some hesitation to going into research where you may get the therapeutic agent or you may not. But I think if we are good about education of all communities around the value, the significance of participating in clinical trials, I think we can achieve higher rates of participation across the board. I'm oftentimes reminded of the statistic that, for example, in oncology clinical trials, fewer than 5% of oncology patients participate in trials, and that's across the board. Unless we're at a point where you're sort of at the end of the road where there are no good therapies and the only option is research. So I think we've got a larger task, both in outreach to minority communities, establishing trust. I think everybody likes, and I would say a mantra I've always had with in preaching to my children and in my own life is that you don't wait to get in touch with folks when you need them. It's important to maintain relationships and build those relationships on an ongoing basis. So it's
and I know you've spoken about education of the medical doctors as well, mm-hmm. to get this inviting mm-hmm. in to happen, not only exactly. the public, to get mm-hmm. them to participate, but the doctors who the public talks to.
Mm-hmm. And so you have to build ambassadors for clinical trial participation at all levels. And I think the other element that we've got to look at is expanding the base of investigators, that you have more community-based research. And I think we've got an important opportunity that we are learning rapidly is that technology can help quite a bit. Use of telehealth tools, use of reminders on cell phones, alternative ways of capturing data that can reduce the burden of participation in clinical trials.
Yes, there's a lot of movement towards telehealth now that all clinical trials are looking at ways to keep patients at home rather than bringing them into the clinic. So we're coming to the end, but I wanted to ask you an important question that community activists are asking me. Are there clinical trials being designed to incorporate African Americans and minorities in the COVID situation?
Absolutely. I would say at the top of the list are going to be trials that are being organized by the National Institutes of Health. They have a very robust framework that takes into account upfront planning in terms of sites and recruitment to ensure that minorities are in trials. There's one specifically that comes to mind that is looking at asymptomatic patients and identifying background rates of potential patients who have may have antibody levels, but were asymptomatic in terms of disease. So I think one of the goals, the audience may be familiar with clinicaltrials.gov. The initial impetus for that site was to raise the profile going back to the AIDS era of clinical trials so that individuals could decide for themselves if a trial or could seek out information on a trial for their own health benefit. And I would certainly encourage, using Google, for COVID-19, it's very easy to do a simple Google search for clinical trials in COVID-19 and opportunities to participate. We're still very much in the early stages of the phase one healthy volunteers for the vaccine trials. But I think we need our communities, we need people to be actively engaged and proactive in seeking participation in clinical trials during this crisis.
Well, thank you, Dr. Bull. It has been a pleasure to talk to you about this very important issue, this health crisis in the United States, and to hear this professional perspective that there's actually reason to believe that something is already going on. There's a lot of focus on this this topic, and things are being done. So thank you for sharing information with us today.
Thank you very much for the opportunity to speak with you.
This is WCG Patient Radio. We've been speaking today with Dr. Jonka Bull, former Assistant Commissioner at the FDA with a focus on diverse populations and at numerous pharmaceutical companies, and an expert on diversity in clinical trials. Thank you for listening, ladies and gentlemen. Goodbye.